Listen to the voices of our world.
I was in prison for almost 4 years.
When we saw these gentlemen arrive on the shores of New York State, we took these gentlemen to be heroes, not liabilities to this country.
Please, President Bush, help us gain legal status.
If I have one message today, it is that we cannot have a one-size-fits-all immigration policy.
Just saying the word immigrant is a provocative word, and that's a shame because we all know we are a nation of immigrants.
Welcome to Voices of Our World, a presentation of this station and Mary Knoll. I'm your host, Eileen Bott. The movie, Golden Venture, had a very prestigious premiere as an official selection of the Tribeca Film Festival's New York Documentary Competition this spring. The movie follows the saga of the rusty freighter of the same name, the Golden Venture, which ran aground in June of 1993 off the coast of Rockaway Beach, Queens, New York. Written, directed, and produced by Peter Cohn, the film Golden Venture is not about a sinking ship, but about the 286 smuggled Chinese passengers forced overboard on that fateful June 6th night. They had all paid dearly for their common dream of someday becoming Americans. Today, we'll talk with two of the legal advocates who have stuck by 30 of the Golden Venture passengers, still fighting for political asylum and legal status, Craig Treblecock and Beverly Church. It was pitch black, the middle of a New York summer night, when nearly 300 people were forced to jump into the icy Atlantic waves some 300 yards off the very shore many had spent nearly a year trying to reach. 286 passengers, 262 men, 24 women, had boarded a 147-foot cargo vessel, most to flee Fujian province in mainland China, to escape China's coercive one-child birth control policies, forced sterilization and abortion, and religious and political repression. Most had paid a snakehead, a people smuggler, the equivalent of $30,000 raised by friends and relatives in their villages so that at least one of their own might find a safer and better life. Attempting to take a route least likely to attract U.S. Coast Guard attention, the freighter had sailed from waters off China to Thailand, to Kenya, and nearly capsized in a storm off the Cape of Good Hope. After relentless months at sea, the smugglers accidentally ran the ship aground off Rockaway Beach after they had mutinied against the Indonesian crew. 10 passengers drowned before the Coast Guard could get to the scene. Another 6 escaped before the Immigration and Naturalization Service officers arrived. 12 were granted asylum by South American countries. A very few received artist visas or were paroled for medical reasons. Many were parceled off in smaller groups and sent to American jails, 52 ending up in York County, Pennsylvania, until President Clinton ordered their parole in 1997. 111 had been immediately deported, but nearly half of these people made equally perilous second and third attempts to come back to America, including Yan Li, who was deported back to China, fined, arrested, beaten, sterilized, and then paid $50,000 for one last chance to become an American. Today, Yan Li is a tax-paying chef at a Chinese restaurant in Arkansas, but he's still not legal. Working on the detainees' behalf since they were first transferred to prison in York County, Pennsylvania, in 1993, Craig Treblecock was initially less than eager to get immersed in what would become an epic court battle. Craig had certainly seen combat before, having served as a captain in the U.S. Army's 11th Cavalry Regiment in West Germany, Bosnia, Hungary, and Iraq. Kathy Golden talked with Craig Treblecock after the Golden Venture press conference.
Based on some of your remarks in there, you had every right, having fought for your country, to call these men heroes. You spoke to their bravery. Can you please tell us again your thoughts and how you came into this case? How did you meet these folks?
Sure. I was a general civil trial attorney in a small town in Pennsylvania called York, Pennsylvania. When these men were brought to our prison, because the prison just had extra space, our local bar association was asked for some volunteers. I actually was not one of the volunteers. My boss was. And as often happens to the guy who's the number two guy, on the day when we were supposed to meet with the clients, he was busy, and he said, Craig, I need you to go. And he's my boss, so I said, yes, sir. And really went out there with I had no fire in my belly, no stars in my eyes about the status of these men or why they were here. Actually, immigration had done quite a good job of letting our bar association know that they were all economic refugees just here to take jobs. And, this was going to be a real easy process to crank the case through. When my attitude changed and when I became motivated on this was after I met with my client a couple of times. His name is Ping Lin. And I did all the usual lawyer tricks to try to trip up my own client, to punch holes in his story. The second time I went back, I twisted around facts that he had told me that would make his case stronger to see if he would bite on the lie to test his sincerity. And from day one till this day now, 13 years later, not one word of his story has changed. He resisted the opportunity to take the bait for puffing up his story to make it better. And now he is here after a very long travail. He left the United States for 7 years, came back, and is here now with his wife and his two children, the two children that the government said didn't exist. And he is a model citizen in our community.
Why would we want to send these people home, this being the land of the free and the home of the brave?
I think that immigration policy waxes and wanes with what's going on in the country at any given time. And the Immigration Service is basically, they call themselves ICE today, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. They used to be the INS. It's basically a law enforcement agency, and they don't have much interest in the humanitarian outcome of a case. They're just there to enforce the laws. And I understand that. They're basically cops. With the weight of the White House against these cases, and we have the documentation from our federal litigation to show that these cases were being discussed with the president, they didn't stand a chance, and they were going to be made an example of. And they have been made an example of. And what the Clinton administration document said was as follows, that if we take this group, lock them up, they're never released and they never get any work papers, it will send a message to the others in China that it's not worth it to come to the United States. So the Golden Venture people have always been more about what they represent and symbolize than their individual stories.
Are there levels of prison? I mean, if a guy's crime is trying to get here because he likes what we have and he wants to be one of us, does he go to jail just like anybody else, or is there a layer that's...
Well, following the Golden Venture pilot project, the administration in 97 adopted this. First, it was a policy. Now it's a statute of mandatory detention, where if you come to the airport in the United States, you escape the brutality of Iraq or Syria or Serbia, you make it out and escape the arbitrary imprisonment and torture, and you arrive at Boston or New York or San Francisco airport and ask for your freedom, you're thrown into prison, mandatory detention. And I really think that sometime in the future, and I hope it's sooner than later, we're going to look back on this period in our history with the same disdain that we look at the mandatory detention of the Japanese in World War II. I think there's a direct parallel there. They're both based on fear and ignorance, stereotypes, and prejudice. And that's exactly what these men are going through. As a veteran, one of the things that keeps me motivated on this case is, for example, after the Golden Venture passengers, we had other nationalities locked up in the York County prison. They included a professor from Kosovo who had 9 children, and the Serbs came in and broke his hands with a truncheon in front of his class for teaching his children in the Albanian language. Okay? 18 months later, we intervened militarily in Kosovo for the dignity and liberty and democracy of the poor Albanian citizens that were being brutalized. Well, we were brutalizing them here in the United States. That professor spent 4 months with his wounds sleeping under an air conditioning duct in the gymnasium of the York County prison. And as a guy who regularly associates with soldiers and Marines, airmen and Navy personnel who go overseas and fight for these people's lives and their dignity, to then come home and see us treating these people with the same sort of arbitrary imprisonment as the countries they're fleeing from outrages me. But the outcome for the Golden Venture passengers, it's really in the hands of the American people. This president right now, he has the opportunity to really grasp victory from the jaws of defeat here, I think people would admire the president for stepping forward and saying, I'm not going to serve up people to a communist nation who have fled to this country for their families, become free, made jobs, have homes. We're just not going to do it. It's wrong. I think the president comes across as a man of very basic and strongly held principles. And with his father, I would expect him to think that sacrificing these men to brutality in communist China is not the way to go. And we have had contact with people who have been deported to China from this ship. They've been thrown into re-education camps. They've been beaten. They've been fined. One man had his legs broken. He was put outside the gates of the re-education camp by the Chinese authority for his family to pick up. When they came to pick him up, the Chinese official pointed to his broken legs and said, he won't run away again, will he? Now, that sort of thing didn't happen to everyone, but if it happens to even one man, isn't that too much for the United States to be an accessory to?
Any idea, Craig, how much these people paid to come here?
I think that the standard so-called figure at the time was about $30,000. Now, some of them, as I gained knowledge of this, these folks didn't have $30,000. A lot of these guys are made a few hundred dollars a year doing labor or work in China. Sometimes villages would pool their money together, almost like an insurance policy, to send somebody forth from that country. And when he would make money, supposedly, in the United States, he would pay the village back. Others, and unfortunately, especially the women, I think, found themselves in a situation where they paid a down payment of $3,000 to $5,000. And then when they got to the United States, they thought they were going to work it off sewing or something like that, working in some sort of sweatshop, which to people like the Chinese is, you know, unpleasant, but they're willing to put up with that for the future of their families. But what would unfortunately happen, particularly in the case of the women, they might be put into an illicit trade. If they did not pay back the smugglers, their families would be subject to coercion back in China, because the smugglers, they're called snakeheads, had people both in China and on this side of the ocean to coordinate their activities.
Lastly, Craig, this is going to be a very interesting election year. Does this particular case, the Golden Venture case, does it become emblematic of the issue itself? And what is the message?
Yeah. The Golden Venture case is absolutely emblematic of the patchwork, band-aid approach to immigration policy that the Congress has pursued over the past 15 years. The American public are sick of it, okay? Whether you're more on the end of the spectrum where you're interested in the security aspect, whether you're on the end where you're interested in the compassionate aspect, whether you're a business person and you're worried about growth, we expect more from our congressmen than to go down to Washington and maneuver and scheme for 2 years how to get reelected again. It's time for those guys to start taking a position on things and pass legislation. There are 12 million supposed undocumented people in this country. The president has recognized you're not going to deport those people. You give people addresses, social security numbers, you mainstream them. That promotes security, not driving people further underground.
Where do you stand on the immigration question? Email us at radio@maryknoll.org or go to our website, www.voicesofourworld.org. Just click on Contact Us. You can call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. You're listening to Voices of Our World.